Part 3, Work and Career History. School Years. Gacy attended Chicago public schools between 1947 and 1952, where he scored below average grades and struggled with his behavior in class. In 1952, he was transferred to a Catholic school, and between 1957 and 1959, attended four different vocational schools. His father wanted him to man up and follow in his footsteps. As a teenager, Gacy wanted to become a priest. Imagine that, the killer priest. In February 1960, at the age of 18, he dropped out of high school after his parents wrote a letter to the principal, saying, "To continue is a waste of time, not only for him, but for you also, seeing as nothing can come of it." When he was 11 years old, a swing in the schoolyard hit him in the head, which caused a concussion and blood clot, which he received treatment for. Following this, he suffered with blackouts, heart problems, and seizures, which prevented him from participating in any extramural activities in school. His self-esteem suffered as a result, and his performance in school dropped. In 1958, he was admitted to hospital many times for his health challenges, which his father said was a fabrication. Based on the evidence, it seems that he was struggling with severe panic attacks, likely due to the abuse he was receiving from his father every day. He suffered with headaches, the sensation of being choked, a racing heart, shortness of breath, and then memory loss about what happened. While his mothers and sisters were concerned about his health, his father increased his verbal and physical abuse, calling him weak, dramatic, and a liar. Democratic Party. When Gacy was 18 years old, he became involved in politics and was elected as a Democratic precinct captain in his area, much to his father's disappointment, who called him a patsy. He had dropped out of college and tried to earn his father's love and respect by getting involved in politics. While many of his superiors and political associates celebrated his hard work, his father never gave him the approval he so desperately craved and deserved. In 1962, his father bought him a car, which he said would only be transferred into his name once it was fully paid off. They agreed on $100 installments per month. If he did not follow his father's precise rules, his keys were confiscated. Gacy had an extra set of keys cut to avoid being restricted by his father, but in response, his father removed the distributor cap and kept it for 3 days. Gacy couldn't take it anymore. Once the cap was replaced, he packed up and moved to Las Vegas to find work. He said that he had a cousin who lived there and worked as a prostitute after also running away from home, so he took Route 66 and headed west to follow in her footsteps. On the first evening, he got as far as 100 miles, 161 kilometers north of St. Louis, and stopped at a rest area where he slept in the car for the night. The next day, he headed to Oklahoma and booked a night in a motel. He left with $136 in his pocket, so he had to be extra careful with every move he made. A few nights later, and after a few more motel stops, he finally made it to Las Vegas, Nevada. After one night in a Vegas motel, Gacy went sightseeing and then sat in his car in the late afternoon to think, not realizing how hot it was. He passed out and was woken up by police officers, who believed he was suffering from heat exhaustion and ordered an ambulance for him. He told him that he would not be able to pay for any medical bills, but they assured him that the state would pay for it. However, he was later sent a bill for the ambulance ride, which he could also not afford to pay off. He approached the ambulance company to see if he could work something out so that he could pay them back somehow. Ambulance service. When Gacy approached the ambulance company and told the owner that he would work back the amount he owed by washing the ambulances or offering any service that he could use a hand with, he was impressed and offered him a permanent job. Gacy told him that he had no place to stay, so the owner offered him a bunk bed in the ambulance room. In the meantime, he was still on a mission to find his cousin, and eventually found her number and address in the telephone book. He went to visit her, where she bragged about how much money she made as a prostitute, charging up to $200 per trick. It's interesting when one considers that Gacy enjoyed doing tricks for his victims, who were most often street hustlers themselves. Perhaps getting close to being a street hustler himself unsettled him, and he took it out on his victims. Once Gacy had settled into his new job for almost 2 months, the owner said that he would need to apply for a work card. The problem was he had to be 21 to apply for one in Vegas, which Gacy was not yet. When he presented the problem to the owner, he offered him a job at a mortuary nearby, where the work permit would not be required. He was tasked with collecting dead bodies from homes and the hospital at night, and was offered a place to sleep at the mortuary. Of course, Gacy had no choice but to accept. Palm Mortuary. The Palm Mortuary accommodated Gacy in the call room, which was situated right next to the embalming room. This would have been quite a disturbing environment for a 20-year-old man who had just run away from home. Over 2 months, Gacy witnessed up to 86 funerals and was the pallbearer for at least 75 people, even though he had no idea who they or their families were. He did, however, see their corpses in the embalming room. This must have had an impact on his thoughts about life and death and the disconnect he felt between himself and the deceased that he was sleeping next to and caring to be buried in the ground. Many have asked how Gacy could have slept in his house with victims buried in the crawl space right beneath the floors. But he had already been desensitized from working and sleeping in a mortuary. In fact, it was possibly even comforting for him in his own depraved way. While Gacy had often told the story of heading home purely because he felt homesick, other reports have said that he shared a different story before. One where he had climbed into the coffin of a young man and shuffled his body on top of him, feeling aroused by the experience. He allegedly felt aroused by his manner of death, which could have been murder or hanging, and felt an overwhelming compulsion to get close to his body. The thrill that he felt excited and terrified him, and the next morning he called his mother, apologized for leaving, and asked if she thought his father would allow him to come back. His father agreed, and Gacy headed back to Chicago the next day. Northwestern Business College. Despite being a high school dropout, Gacy successfully enrolled in Northwestern Business College on his return to Chicago, likely to overcompensate for the inadequacy that his father was projecting onto him. He excelled and graduated in 1963, with a determination to succeed as a salesman, and accepted a management trainee position at a shoe company in the area. Nunn Bush Shoe Company. In 1963, after graduating from the Northwestern Business College in Chicago, Illinois, Gacy accepted a management trainee position at the Nunn Bush Shoe Company. The company transferred him to a branch in Springfield, Illinois, to work as a salesman at the Roberts Brothers clothing store, and by 1964, he had been promoted to manager of his department. During this time, he lived with an aunt and uncle as he worked his way up the career ladder. Gacy networked with various clothing brands, including Jockey, Van Heusen, prominent jewelry stores, and other luxury brands of the time, where he offered cost price of the shoes that he was selling in exchange for gifts from his clients. In a letter that he shared with an interviewer from the New Yorker magazine, he said, "I enjoyed the attention, and it made a good impression on the customer. Not only would they know I was the manager, but just by looking at me, you knew I had to be the boss. I dressed and looked like an owner or a millionaire even when I was young." Marlon Myers, a co-worker, was enamored with Gacy, and the pair were engaged by March of 1964 and married by September. Local JCs. In 1964, Gacy joined the local JCs, United States Junior Chamber of Commerce, a leadership training and civic organization for men aged between 18 and 40. Their goal was to help young men to move up the career ladder by community involvement and specialized training. Today, the JCs invite both men and women to join, and its only limitation is age, 21 to 39. Gacy worked so hard for the local JCs that by April of the same year, 1964, he was named key man. By 1965, he was elected as the vice president of the Springfield JCs, and in that same year, he was named as the third most outstanding JC in the state of Illinois. He was accepted and admired within his new community, who were also known to let loose at functions and parties. Get-togethers included wife-swapping, prostitution, drug use, drinking, and pornography, so Gacy had found the perfect balance between work and play, blurring the lines as he climbed the ranks. Kentucky Fried Chicken. When Gacy had married Marlon, her father, Fred W. Myers, offered him the opportunity to work within the family business. He owned three Kentucky Fried Chicken franchises and offered Gacy an attractive contract, even though he required him to work his way up from the very bottom. The Myerses also gifted their daughter and new son-in-law with their house, which they vacated for them. This was an offer that Gacy could not refuse. He started off with a job of sweeping floors, packing chicken, and learning the original KFC secret recipe, allegedly from Kentucky Fried Chicken University, which he was very proud of. Soon enough, he was promoted to manager of the three franchises and was offered a lucrative salary of $15,000 per year, equivalent to $123,900 in 2021, plus commission. He worked between 12 and 16 hours a day, determined to succeed in his new career and to make his father proud. He simultaneously continued his work for the JCs and spent most of his free time socializing with them. Once they had settled into the house, Gacy opened a club in his basement to socialize with his employees, where he offered them alcohol, drugs, and entertainment. He asked them to call him the Colonel, the Duke, Mr. Gacy, or John, and enjoyed the power and influence he had over them. People started to notice that he only offered the most attractive boys a ride home, and was selective with who he invited to his club, which obviously excluded all female employees. Some boys started talking about his sexual advances and predatory nature, but when he was questioned, he laughed it off as a test of morals or sarcasm. In February 1966, Marlon gave birth to their first child, Michael, and in March 1967, their second, Christine. When Gacy's parents visited the couple in July 1966 to meet their grandson, he finally got the approval that he'd been looking for all his life. His father said, "Son, I was wrong about you." Gacy would later describe this period of his life as perfect. He became cocky and overconfident, bragging to his fellow JCs about unrealistic achievements in his life, where he was described as a braggart and motormouth. For example, he spoke about his years in the Marines and his time driving ambulances in Las Vegas. And when his lies were challenged or exposed, he simply buried them under more lies. When friends brought up the rumors about his homosexual tendencies, he made offensive comments about homosexuals and laughed off any accusations. By the end of 1967, Gacy was poised to become the president of the local JC's chapter, but at the same time he had assaulted two teenagers within a few months, which cost him all the success he had worked so hard to achieve. He was reported in March of 1968 and indicted for sodomy charges on May the 10th, 1968. By September, he was being evaluated at a psychiatric institution and had failed two polygraph tests, which resulted in his 10-year sentence at the Anamosa State Penitentiary on December 3, 1968. His wife filed for divorce, and Gacy never saw her or his children again. Bruno's Restaurant. After serving only 18 months of his 10-year sentence, Gacy was released from prison on early parole for his good behavior, where he had also maintained his success as a JC member behind bars, enrolling in 23 JC subcommittees and recruiting 600 new members. He was a cook who revolutionized the menu and made the food more edible for inmates using his knowledge of spices, and was also in charge of the commissary, which ranked him highly amongst fellow prisoners. He also completed 16 high school courses and started enrolling in his college-level classes by the time he was released, mostly driven by the trauma of losing his father while he was locked up. His father died on Christmas Day in 1969, which Gacy internalized as his own failure as a son. In one way, it got him to work even harder, but also snapped a part of him psychologically, where he no longer had anyone to authentically try to impress. His parole required him to live with his widowed mother, adhere to a 10 p.m. curfew, and avoid any homosexual activity. His first job was at a family friend's restaurant known as Bruno's, which was a popular downtown restaurant that attracted the Blackhawks hockey team, police officers, and prominent members of the Chicago community. Gacy fit in perfectly and became a charismatic host, engaging with the clientele and befriending as many people as he possibly could. He bragged about being married to the Colonel's daughter, referring to the founder of KFC, and told elaborate stories to entertain his new friends. He earned his way into receiving perks from his acquaintances, which included free tickets to the Blackhawks games, which he naturally handed out to other people as gifts, displaying what a great guy he was. By 1971, he was working as a cook at the restaurant during the day and on his own company at night. He got permission from his parole officer to work on his business in the evenings after work, which was how PDM Contractors was started. He was so determined to succeed that he worked 14 to 16 hours on most days of the week, and was reportedly hospitalized for exhaustion on a few occasions. PDM Contractors. In 1971, Gacy officially registered his own company, which he called PDM Contractors. It stood for Painting, Decorating, and Maintenance, and the majority of his initial clients were found through the contacts he made at the restaurant. At first, he offered minor repair work, such as painting signs, pouring concrete, and redecorating. But within a relatively short space of time, he had expanded to offer remodeling, interior design, landscaping, and assembly service work. As his business expanded, so did his demands for a bigger storage space for all his equipment. His mother agreed to buy a house with him in Norwich, where they would each pay half for the property. His mother and sisters owned 50% of the property, while he owned 50%, which was the infamous Ronge House at 8213 West Summerdale Avenue. By mid-1973, he had quit his job at the restaurant to immerse himself into his business full-time, as well as indulging in his side activities as a JC, registered clown, and serial rapist and killer. He eventually asked his mother to move out of the house because he prioritized the reputation of his business so highly that he could not stand her answering the phone at the house during the day, where she explained to clients that she was his mother. Gacy was reportedly making approximately $300,000 per year from his business, and while he may not have been the best craftsman, he certainly was a good businessman. He hired mostly teenage boys, insistent that they work the hardest for the least money, even though he offered attractive hourly wages compared to other menial jobs. He murdered several of his employees between 1972 and 1978, as well as scores of other young men and boys, even getting his employees to dig some of the graves in the crawl space. He owned PDM Contractors and worked the long hours he was accustomed to until the very day that he was arrested for the last time and sentenced to death. Maintenance manager. At an apartment block just 4 miles from his house, Gacy served as the maintenance manager between 1971 and 1975, at some point even moving his mother in and mentally establishing the place as his second home. He did some painting, landscaping, and other activities during his time there, some of which are suspected of being tied to foul play. Once his mother had decided to move to Arkansas, he moved on from the building and focused his attention on his home-based business, PDM Contractors. Clowning. Robert F. Martwick, the leader of the Democratic Committee Norwood, advised Gacy to become more involved in the community if he was serious about running for public office someday, particularly in projects that involved community service. Gacy was already clearing snow on neighbors' pathways in winter for free and hosting large, themed community parties regularly at his house. But to step up his efforts, he decided to join the Jolly Joker Clown Club at his local Moose Club, where he was already a member. They regularly entertained children at parties, fundraisers, and in hospitals, which presented him with a perfect opportunity to prove himself to his community. The children were aged 3 to 5, and Gacy felt that he could regress into childhood around them. He also clowned at annual picnics arranged by the Pharmacists Drug Association, where he kept the children of his clients entertained. Gacy invented the name Pogo, which stood for Polish on the Go. He was proudly Polish and was always on the go, so it was a fitting name. He designed his own clown costumes and makeup looks and propelled himself into the world of clowning for entertainment at parties associated with the Norwood Township Democrats. He invited Michael Rossi, one of his PDM employees, to clown with him and to assume the role of Patches, his other clown persona, describing Pogo as a chirpy, jovial character and Patches as a more serious one. Gacy loved clowns so much that he dedicated an entire room in his house to clown paintings and memorabilia, which looked like a gallery to police when they first searched his home. While he was mostly cheerful and funny as a clown, a sadistic adult streak was triggered if children pretended that he had not yet given them a sweet or a balloon to try to get more out of him. He hated this. He later said that he used his experience as a clown to trick his victims into handcuffs or rope, also murdering those who he believed had been greedy in some sense. For example, if they raised their price for sexual favors, Gacy had no tolerance for that and murdered them. It was his use of clown tricks for murder that earned him the name the Killer Clown, as well as the shocking discovery that a party clown within the community was capable of such heinous acts. During the time that he was on 24-hour surveillance, he told the police on several occasions that clowns could get away with murder. On some days, Gacy was known to visit bars after entertaining children all day, still wearing his full clown attire, a chilling depiction of a lonely, sadistic clown who murdered dozens of teenage boys. On death row, Gacy never let go of his love of clowns, spending most of his time painting them. Of course, he also painted other things, but mostly his paintings depicted clowns or skulls with clown costumes on. These were also some of the most valuable and creepiest paintings, with some selling for upwards of $25,000 apiece. When Jason Moss, the author of The Last Victim, wrote letters to Gacy, he received some of his clown paintings as gifts, which eerily depicts the association that Gacy had between his clown mask and predatory advances. I think we can all agree that John Wayne Gacy was the least funny and most evil clown that ever existed. Winston's Ice Cream Shop. Gacy worked at an ice cream shop at Division and State Street, where he entertained patrons as a clown. He thought it was funny that they had 33 flavors, because he had 33 known victims.